You are listening to another Screenfish one-on-one, this time live with director Sanjay Rawal. In this one-on-one, Doctober continues as Sanjay tells us about his new documentary, 3100 Run and Become, a new documentary about endurance, enlightenment, and why we run. Focusing on the self-transcendence 3100-mile race, Sanjay follows Aspriano Aalto, an unassuming Finnish paperboy, and Shimita, an Australian cellist, in an incredible and honest conversation. Sanjay talks about why we pilgrimage, the relationship between faith and the physical body, and how this story has changed his life. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish.
I love what you guys do. I'm really, really excited to have the chance to talk to you.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's fantastic. Well, I saw 3100, and it is just a fascinating film. It is really, really interesting. Maybe can you tell us a little bit about how you came to be associated with it, or what interested you about this story?
You know, I actually moved as a 21-year-old from Northern California to New York City in 1997. And I ended up in the same neighborhood as the 3100. I came to New York for grad school, but it's like I had friends that were students of the founder of the 3100, Sri Chinmoy. And so I ended up in the neighborhood and, you know, ended up, you know, following Sri Chinmoy. But, you know, I was a runner in college and I was a runner in high school. And the 3100-mile race just scared daylights out of me. I wasn't even inclined to run a marathon in those days, much less, you know, there are 2+ marathons a day. And as I kind of became more mature, got involved with human rights and, you know, got into film about 8 or 9 years ago, I realized, like, you know, there's something exceptionally fascinating happening in that race. You know, physical power, like mental will, they don't really mean anything there. And I noticed passively that everybody that had entered the race, and particularly those that had done well, you know, came from varied traditions, but they all came with this deep belief that that run was going to make them a better person.
Hmm.
It was literally like they approached the run as a pilgrimage.
Hmm.
And a couple of years back, in 2015, I just finished a farm labor film called Food Chain. And, you know, having spent 3 glorious years in, like, farm worker towns eating the best Mexican food, I said, like, I need to make a movie that's going to inspire me to get healthy again.
Hmm. Well, a 3100-mile race would do that.
Exactly. Even watching them makes you hungry.
I think you say in the documentary they consume something like 10,000 calories a day.
At minimum, and they probably drink about 2 to 2.5 gallons of water a day.
One of the things about this race that I found so interesting is that it's really around 4 city blocks, just in one square.
It's technically it's one block, but since it circles a high school and a small park, it's pretty big. So it's a little less than a kilometer, a little more than a half a mile loop.
Why do people want to do it? I mean, not just running in general, but this particular race. What is it that excites them so much about running a little less than a kilometer for days in and days out?
I think that the reason has changed over the now 22-year history of the race. The first people that ran it in the late 90s tended to be like professional or semi-professional athletes that saw this as like the pinnacle of distance running. I mean, it still is the longest certified race in the world.
Right.
Across the years, though, I think people realized that the race kind of afforded a very, very unique opportunity. Because it's on a contained half-mile loop with no traffic other than foot traffic, you don't have to worry about food, water, facilities, shelter. like you would if you were running across Canada or if you're running across the United States. And so you could literally go beyond your mind. And you're not having to worry about logistics. You're not having to worry about distance. You enter into what sports scientists call the flow state. And it's something that I experienced once doing a six-day race where, you know, people who do a lot of fasting and a lot of, like, you know, kind of deep, like, cleansing all seem to say that after a few days of those practices, the body seems to sense what's going on and it makes life easier for the participants. In these ultra-long distance runs, and I've seen it across traditions, that there's something deeply embedded in our physiology that after a few days of our body kind of getting used to, you know, pushing itself to those limits, it enters into a zone where people just have these exceptional, very lucid, absolutely non-hallucinatory experiences. Deep, powerful emotions. And lastly, like, I've seen a lot of people kind of aid their own recovery from dependency through marathon running, through ultra-distance running. And I actually think there's a physiological basis for that. It's not just, like, the discipline or the mental or psychological rigor.
Yeah, see, this was one of the things about this doc that really got my attention, is there seems to be a really strong relationship between running and the spiritual. I think one of the comments that's made in preparation for the 3100 specifically is that you will be changed and you will be changed for the better. What is it about running that causes this deep spiritual experience, this awakening, if you will?
You know, this is why I'm really excited to talk to you, because our film at its basis is exploring the intersection of faith and the physical body. And in so many traditions, there's a history of combining the two. Obviously, in Christian traditions, the notion of pilgrimage.
Sure.
And allowing your body to take part in, like, the soul's journey. At the same time, like, when we went way back, like, the Kalahari Bushmen have been around for 125,000 years, you know, they remarked to us that in their belief, consciousness and the physical body evolved together. And this statement, you know, fits both with, like, Darwinism and, like, creationism. That once the consciousness reached a certain level, it needed a different form to manifest, and that was the human body. That afforded consciousness a kind of a special opportunity to advance and to grow. And so the Bushmen feel like consciousness and the physical go hand in hand. That the body's original role was to express that consciousness, but also to allow the consciousness to grow. So for them, they see the most primal, and primal in a good way, like the most kind of, like, innate form of human spirituality is utilizing all the tools that, in their words, in Navajo word too, like, that the Creator has given us. Like, we don't have the body just to sit in silence. You know, the body has to be part of our spiritual life. And running, dance, these activities that connect our feet with our breath and our heart and our spiritual beings are one of the most ancient forms of spiritual practice. And again, in Eastern Hindu traditions, monks were itinerant. They wouldn't stay in temples. They would constantly wander. And that practice of wandering, you know, obviously they're walking 15, 20, 30 miles a day. You know, they would beg for food, so it was like there was austerity involved. And as you know from the Christian traditions, it's like, you know, beloved saints like, you know, Saint Teresa and you know, and Saint Francis, like, they underwent, like, tremendous physical disciplines, austerities even. And that's absent from like modern contemplative practices where we sit at a pew for like an hour or two or three on a Sunday, or someone sits, you know, in meditation for 15, 20 minutes in the morning. That's not disciplining the body. That's not giving the body an opportunity to partake in the spiritual life. And so long story short, or short story long, I saw in this 3,100-mile race that people were coming to it because for the first time maybe in their modern lives, they were given an opportunity to experience like the nexus of the body's aspiration and their own kind of like contemplative, prayerful life.
Hmm. Yeah. One of the things I've seen and heard in faith traditions is the separation of body and soul. But I think you're absolutely right. Like, there's a deep connection. There's absolutely a deep connection, you know. I mean, you tell this, of course, through, I think it's four different stories. The Navajo, the monks, the 3,100, and am I missing one?
The Bushmen.
The Bushmen, of course.
Yeah.
So what, was there something that you found was a common experience for in the midst of all four stories?
I think the character that expressed it best was Sean Martin, the Navajo character.
Hmm.
Where, like, running is a form of prayer. You know, he says, our feet are on Mother Earth. We're breathing in Father Sky. You know, we're praying to the holy people for their blessings. The Bushmen feel like when they run, they are speaking to their ancestors. They're speaking to the Creator. And when they hunt, they're asking the Creator and their ancestors for blessings to be successful.
Mm.
And then Sean's second part is like running is a teacher. Hmm. You know, running allows us to get through the hardships of life, and it teaches us about ourselves. And lastly, running is a celebration of life.
Hmm.
You know, it's a chance to connect with other people and to connect with the world. I mean, you see that in the few traditions that still have the idea of pilgrimage, whether it's the Hajj to Mecca or, you know, the Catholic pilgrimages. It's not a solitary experience.
Hmm.
You know, you realize that like faith is not the sole monopoly of any individual or any particular tradition. That faith is in essence, it's like a bank, and we're all depositing into the same bank and drawing from the same bank. And these experiences of pilgrimage, you know, make you realize like, wow, there is a sense of there is a true oneness among spiritual seekers.
Hmm. You know, you focus a lot of the film on, I'm going to say his name wrong, but Ashprihanal, is that?
That's perfect.
And he, I think if I'm right, he's done the race, the 3,100, 14 times. Is there, in your conversations with him, in your time with him, was there anything that he shared that maybe he had taken out of this experience? Because, I mean, he's done it so much. He certainly has felt that this is a spiritual experience when you hear him talking. But is there anything in particular that he mentioned that he had collected?
So, like, I'll give you two examples, one from Ashprihanal and one from the winner of the race in the year we filmed, Yuri.
Hmm.
So, Ashprihanal is very demure, and He says over and over and over that running is his meditation.
Hmm.
And it's, you know, colloquially people say like, oh, you know, chopping onions is my meditation. But he actually takes the practice to heart, where he's trying to silence his mind. He's trying to pray. He's trying to go deep within. But Yuri, even though we don't show it very much in the film, Yuri takes less of a contemplative approach and more of a devotional approach.
Hmm.
And for Yuri, it's not so much about the silencing of the mind. It's about the amplification of the prayer. You know, when and I think this is very, very kind of Christian. Like, in his physical sufferings, he's able to pull out a deeper sense of reliance on God.
Hmm.
And it's like the combination of like physical turmoil and like the soul's turmoil combined for more intensity. And in 2015, 2015, 2014, Yuri had an experience of literally seeing angels.
Wow.
On the chorus. And it's all like, you know, well, what does that mean? And, like, how can I believe it? But it was such a powerful experience for Yuri. I'm sorry, it was 2015. It was such a powerful experience for Yuri that even after he finished the 3,100 miles, he was coming out to the course every morning at 6 a.m. and running 3 to 4 hours for the next month and a half.
Really?
That's yeah, because it's like... It's like that experience of the angels of holiness, you know, existed on that course. Like he had that experience there. So for him, like, why not go there and keep the experience going?
Yeah.
Like just like a mystic, you know, if they were on a pilgrimage, and this goes across traditions, like a mystic on a pilgrimage, you have an experience in a temple or in a cave. You know, you stay there for a few months and you milk that experience and you enjoy it. And so here he had that experience and it was just like, you know, if I just show up there every morning, I can like give this experience like a long tail.
Wow.
And that's when I was just like, this is beyond like wishful thinking. It's beyond like anything that can be explained through psychiatry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is it's a legitimate experience because it's like he has to get more.
Yeah, that is absolutely incredible. So through his time, it literally transformed his day-to-day life from this.
Yeah. Yeah, like most of the participants in the 3100 have the kind of like classic experience where they recognize over like the cauldron of the 52 days, they've come out with a set of experiences that they can bring into their life and give them strength through the next 1, 2, 5, 10, 15 years. But Yuri had like a classical mystical experience that like blew his mind right in that second and like permanently changed him from that moment forward.
Oh, that's remarkable. One of the other things that struck me is sort of the camaraderie amongst racers. You see, in most cases, when you see, you know, footage of races and just traditional races, people are trying to defeat the other person. And there is some of that. Ash Prihanal actually says this is not only a spiritual journey, it's a race. But, you know, one of the things that struck me in this is watching when other racers would get ill or there was a genuine concern about them eating properly. Ash Prihanal is caring for other people who are participating, not just, I'm going to do this and I'm going to win. There seemed to be an absolute sense of community amongst the people that were racing together.
You're absolutely correct. You know, there was a gentleman who did the race this last summer named Kobi, K-O-B-I, and his last name is O-R-E-N. Jewish from Israel. And one of the best, you know, runners, specialty runners in the world. And he came into the race with the idea of it being a race. And, you know, he was very attuned to his splits and to, he was running his own race. And after about 1,000 miles or 1,500 miles, he realized that this wasn't a race. This was a pilgrimage. And the miles didn't matter. The journey didn't matter. Each moment in the race was a ritual. And each action in the race is a ritual. And I think that kind of falls in line with your observation of the runners, where it's like, it's not about getting to a distance alone. It's about how you experience each moment and how you kind of manifest your goodness in each moment. You take each step for what it's worth, that each step is an affirmation, or each step gives you an opportunity to point your mind in the right direction. And so it's like the race isn't a series of miles, it's a series of opportunities. And with that in mind, the runners, rather than being kind of introverted, as one might expect with a race this long, you literally, you keep an open heart, because it's like that kind, it's that kind of strength that you need to get through the race. It's the heart and not the focus of the mind.
Having said all this, I mean, you've referred to the race, but not just that. And I mean, you certainly, with the other experiences as well, you've used the term pilgrimage a lot. Why do you think it's so important that we take these pilgrimages? What is it about us across the world that drives us to do these things? And I don't just mean the race. I mean taking a pilgrimage. All faith seems to have some form of it.
That's a great question. And, I only really understood this when I went on a run with Sean Martin. We go on pilgrimages, I believe, because we want a direct experience of transformation.
Hmm.
You know, obviously, it's not sightseeing. It's not cultural. You want to be transformed. You want to come out of it as a different or a more insightful or a better person than when you started. And people from experience, they say, like, if you do this particular route at this particular time with this particular intention, gathered from, like, esoteric or mystical traditions, you will have a better chance of that transformation.
Mm.
At the same time, there are cultures, particularly indigenous cultures, that look to have that experience of pilgrimage every day.
Mm.
Like for Sean Martin and the Navajo, Canyon de Chelly, Chelly, but I learned it's pronounced Canyon de Chelly. It's one of the holy sites of the Navajo people.
Mm.
And it's literally like a nature-born shrine.
Hmm.
And so moving through it is an act of pilgrimage.
Hmm.
And there are many other places in the Navajo Nation, and for indigenous cultures in America, you know, every culture has like landmarks in nature that represent some form of the divine. And so, you know, if you run through or walk through those areas with that kind of codified intention, you can have the experience daily of transformation.
Hmm. Hmm.
And we don't have that kind of sacredness in our outer lives in the modern West. You know, we don't, like in India, for example, and some of the more ancient places, and you know, in Europe as well, there are traditions of you know, visiting certain churches or certain temples, and even sometimes, you know, walking around them, walking through them, visiting, you know, the 15, 20, 30, 40 shrines within them. It's kind of like, you know, a 15-minute walking meditation when you walk through some of the old churches in Europe. And that's a micro-pilgrimage. You know, you leave your home, you maybe walk with a candle, you walk with some flowers, you walk with an offering. You present them at the shrine, whether it's a Hindu or a Catholic shrine. You do so with a sense of intention. You might sit for a few moments in contemplation, and then you go home. And so that's very much a meditation that where you're in motion.
Hmm.
And it's like a daily pilgrimage. I found that, like, the run with that intention makes the world the shrine.
Hmm.
It's like you can run down a street because, like the Navajo say, like, your feet are still on Mother Earth. You're still breathing in Father Sky, but are you asking the holy people for their blessing?
Hmm.
If you're just running with your watch or with your music, you're not.
Hmm.
It's like if you're just walking to the church because there's a good espresso place by it, you know, that's not the same thing. So the idea of, like, turning everyday life into pilgrimage, I think is like a return to the sacred traditions that sustained us.
That's beautiful. I hadn't thought of that, but you're right. There's a connectedness that we intentionally turn off, especially in our daily culture, and lose that sense of daily pilgrimage. That's fascinating. Senji, it is a great film. As we start to wrap up, I had one question for you, which I hope you don't mind me asking. I would understand.
No.
But I was just curious. You know, you said that you did some running, and this film feels so personal. Was there something particularly that you took away from this, or something that changed you in this process?
It's a tough question.
No.
Not because it's personal, but because, like, for me, that I think that I thought when the film was over that, like, my perspective on simply running had changed. You know, like, none of my coaches had ever told me, like, you know, running is a prayer. And I felt that my change was simply in the exposure to that philosophy. But, you know, we've been on tour with the film in a number of native cities and a number of, like, mountain running cities. And everyone from 800-meter Olympians to 100-mile champions have come and joined me on panels and really expressed kind of a profound sense of connection to the emotions that the film brings out in them. And what I'm really taking away, particularly because this is an election cycle, and this is not really a well-formed thought because I think it's just beginning to impact me, is that, like, when I'm on a trail, you know, and I pass somebody, I never think about, like, what their political affiliation is, what their religious affiliation is, you know, what their nationality or background is. You know, there's a sense that, you know, in activities that involve the mind, we're constantly dividing and we're constantly comparing, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. But there are some activities, and I'm trying to develop, like, a sense of what those are. There are some activities that seem to be so basic and human, where people are basically boiled down to, like, with running, with their feet, their breath, and their heart. Whether the heart is spiritual or just cardiovascular, it's like you have those three things. You know, you could go anywhere in the world and do that with other people, have an experience, and not share a single word or a single bit of information. And I'm becoming more curious as to what the other types of those experiences are. And I know, for example, like Malcolm X, you know, famously said that, like, when he finally went on the pilgrimage to Mecca, his conception of Islam totally changed. And I know that's what, like, people, you know, I've friends who came from, like, very restrictive Christian churches, and for some crazy reason, and it's not even in their faith, in their particular faith, went on, you know, I forget the name of it, but the famous pilgrimage in Spain.
Yes.
Right, and it's not a Protestant pilgrimage, it's not an evangelical, but they're just like, well, this is Christian, and I don't get it, we don't do it, but I'll go do it. And they come back, and they just have this different view of humanity. And again, it's like, when you're on pilgrimages like that, like, no one's testing you about, like, your interpretations of biblical verses.
Yeah.
You know, and no one even cares if you're a Christian. You know, it's like, you're on that pilgrimage, you're one of us. So I'm trying to, like, develop some type of unifying theory in my head about, like, what makes us human. And I saw from this movie that, like, running and walking and those experiences are so basic and energizing at the same time and transformative. I wish we could find ways as people to do more of those types of activities.
What you're saying is really, it certainly connects with me. I mean, like you said, this is what we want to do with the website, is these, is have these conversations. This is just amazing.
Yeah. That's why when Wayman sent me over the link, about a week ago, I was like, oh my God, this is perfect.
A film like this is just an excellent reminder of the connection of who we are with our spiritual selves and how to bring them together in a unique and powerful way that's really transformative. It's just an incredible film, Sanjay. Really well done.
That means the world to me. Thanks so much, Steve.
Oh, thank you. And now, I understand it comes out in New York, I think, on the 26th. Is there a wide release plan after that, or am I wrong?
Yeah, we're going to go digital, I think, December 10th.
Oh, in December 10th.
We're, So yes, after New York, we go L.A., and we're going to go wide in November and probably do 10 to 15 cities, but we're gonna wrap it up pretty quickly so that we can get the film out to everyone before the Christmas holidays. We kind of did things non-traditionally where we started in communities, I mean, honestly, in communities of faith, like Native American faith. We started in Santa Fe, Albuquerque, and kind of moved through those southwestern indigenous communities, and then the more kind of like progressive hippie running towns like Portland and Boulder, kind of as proof of concept for doing New York and LA, and then a bunch of like the kind of more traditional dock cities like Atlanta, Dallas, Washington, San Francisco, which we're all doing in November. But at the same time, like, we've had people drive 9 hours to see the film.
Wow. Wow. Which would probably
we realize, like, there's demand out there, so.
Yeah. Which would probably be about 400 miles if they drove 9 hours, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, so we were in North Lake Tahoe because of it's a mountain community. People drove from Salt Lake.
Yeah. Wow. Wow, that's incredible. It's an amazing film, Sanjay. It really is, and asks great questions, and certainly is something that can bring people together. So I really appreciate it. Certainly it's something that people should check out, and we look forward to seeing it, and hopefully it does really well.
Thank you so very much, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you, Sanjay. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you. Thanks again, Steve. Bye-bye.